T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Joining us right now, hell of a pitcher, had a hell of a career, pitched in the majors for over 20 years, pitched a perfect game, won a couple of World Series, and of course was a member of the New York Yankees, and that's David Wells. David, Joe, and Evan, hopefully you're keeping safe. How are you?
David, how are you?
I'm good, guys, and I am keeping safe. Like 22 days now, quarantined?
Yes.
Something like that.
I've lost track, David. Yeah. I got to be honest. Yeah. I don't even know.
No,
what day
I think
now.
I'm on 22. I think tomorrow's 23 or something like that. So I've been good.
You know, during my quarantine, David, I've watched a lot of old baseball games, and this may surprise you that this is the first game I'm going to bring up to you, but you did something very impressive in this game. And that was during the 1992 World Series against the Braves. You guys obviously won the World Series. I'm watching Game 6 because that's a very underrated game in World Series history. And for those who don't remember this, David Wells is on the mound. I think you got Otis Nixon on first base, and you just keep throwing over there. And you're keeping him close the entire time. Big spot in this game. And then finally, he gets caught stealing. And it was all to the credit of you for keeping him close. And I think that's the one out you got in that game. But that was an underrated game and a very underrated moment, David. And I give you all the credit for that caught stealing of Otis Nixon.
Well, you're a historian because I have no recollection of you doing that.
You know what's funny, man? As I was watching it, I'm thinking to myself, I wonder who remembers things like this. And so as the guy that was doing it, you don't even remember it.
You don't remember that, David, at all?
Yeah, I remember. I remember the game, but I didn't get a whole lot of playing time back in those days. Because I ended up getting released the next year by the Blue Jays. But I remember going in there, getting my appearance in, and I do not remember picking him off or him getting caught on a caught stealing.
Well, here's the good news. It actually happened, David.
Well, no, but we knew that Otis, everyone knew Otis can run.
Right.
So, you know, I had a couple throwovers come from Cito, he related to, or somebody related to Borders, and then, you know, but then I threw a lot over there on my own, knowing with a guy that's fast, you know, with a lefty, and, you know, some people could read lefties better than others, and, you know, if I put my head down, I went home. If I looked home, then I went to first. So I was pretty predictable. So I found out later, but the good thing was, you keep a guy close, you know, those things can happen.
Sure.
You know, Dave, everybody remembers you with the Yankees. When I think of David Wells, the first, you know, obviously the first team I think about is the Yankees. But if I'm not mistaken, tell me if I'm wrong here, 1996 playoffs, the we'll call it the Jeffrey Mayer playoff series, when the Yankees beat the Orioles, I believe, in five. Didn't you win the only game for the Orioles against the Yankees in that series?
I did. David Cohn, I think, and I had a battle going on. And you know, in that game, because I knew I could beat the Yankees. I just, you know, when I came up to the big leagues, my first start was against the Yankees, against my idol Ron Guidry. So I ended up losing that game. My first game I ever pitched in the big leagues was against them, lost. But then after that, I became a Yankee killer. So every time we go in, I always had good success against them. And so to me, it was, you know, going into that game, I always felt good about pitching against the Yankees because I always felt that I could beat them, and I did.
What went in, because at that point in your career when you signed with the Yankees after that year, 1996, you're 34 years old. You've had a good career. I think the best part of your career happens once you sign with the Yankees, especially with some of the individual accomplishments that you had, obviously being on that 98 team. But what led you as a free agent to signing with the New York Yankees?
Well, I got the opportunity, and I grew up here in San Diego, you know, a Padre fan and a Yankee fan. Because I used to watch all the Yankee games that I could, and when they went to Anaheim, we'd go up there and watch them there. And I just for some reason, as a little kid, you know, doing all my reports, always were on Babe Ruth and the Yankees, and you know, so it just my love for the Yankees for some reason. And plus, one of my good buddies, well, there was three brothers that we always hung out, and their dad was from New York, so I was always over at their house. And when the games came on during the weekend, he'd always grab me. I wouldn't go out and play with the crew. I'd go and watch the Yankee games. And I watched Ron Guidry's 18 strikeout game
against the Angels.
Or was it 16 or 18?
18.
Yeah. So
1978.
Yeah. So I watched that game with Mr. Dre, and you know, to me, it was just one of those things. I've always wanted to play for either the Padres or the Yankees, and I got that opportunity, so I signed with the Yankees. No questions asked. They said George offered me a contract. I said done. I didn't care what it was. I would have signed.
Your agent must have been thrilled. I mean, your agent was probably thinking, can we negotiate a little bit more on this?
Well, I mean, back then, I mean, it really didn't matter to me. That's a lot of money when you're making $3-4 million instead of trying to get, you know, yeah, would it be great to get $6-7 million, but right. I didn't care. I just wanted to play for the Yankees.
You knew where you wanted to go. And it really worked out because, like I said, your career, I feel like you got better as your career went on. And I think we always say that now about lefties. We look at left-handers and say, oh, well, give them time. Maybe when they turn 30, they'll start to get better. What for you worked? What kind of got you to the point? Because I think that 1998 season, and maybe you disagree, I think that was the best year you ever had. You had a hell of a year statistically. You pitched the perfect game. You're on that great team. But for you, what kind of changed where you were able to develop as a pitcher a little bit later in your career?
Well, when I went over to Detroit after Toronto released me, you know, Sparky Anderson, I spent a lot of time with him, and he sat me down and just taught me the game on and off the field, even though off the field stuff didn't really apply, but you know, at least I had it in the back of my mind, the do's and don'ts. But just learning how to pitch. He told me, if you want to learn how to pitch, go talk to your hitters. So I go talk to Gibby. I go talk to Tram, you know, Lou Whitaker, Dan Gladden. I would talk to guys like that and just pick their brains. And then so as the teams that I went on from there, I would always pick the hitters' brains on and pitch counts and what are they looking for. And that's how I learned how to really develop like anybody. So I was always challenging. And I think in 96 with Baltimore, I think I was 11-14 that year, but look how many games I went into the ninth inning. And Davey Johnson's like, you're my guy. He goes, you're the best man for the job. I lost a lot of games in, you know, in the ninth inning. You know, and it just, to me, it was learning how to pitch and taking that into my later in my career when I didn't have the velocity I had early on.
Right.
So it makes you learn how to pitch. So I just, even though I was throwing 92, 93, I was throwing it in, up, down, away, and but I had great control, so that helped me out later in my career.
You know, in a time, David, and talking to David Wells, when there's so many guys get the Tommy John surgery, one thing I always remember with you, you had like a rubber arm. I mean, you know, you could pitch. Are you talking about like in 96, you know, all these games you said you pitched into the ninth inning? I mean, it just seemed like you could throw any time, and it was never an issue with that arm, David.
No, and I wish I had it now because I can't lift my hand, my arm above my head half the time. So much arthritis and you know,
really?
Surgery I had a few years ago. But you know, I was blessed. I got, you know, I was, you know, one of those guys who could wake up and throw a 12-6 right out of bed without even stretching. So that was a blessed arm for, you know, my whole career and then a little bit afterwards. But as you get older, your body starts changing, you know, arthritis kicks in, just these nagging pains and aches and pains, and everybody over 50 is going to feel it, and if they're not, they're lying.
Yeah, you got that right there.
Yeah, you have any regrets over that? Would you have retired earlier, or do you kind of look at your career and say, I loved every second of it, wouldn't do it again?
No, I would. I tried to play going into 45.
I remember, yeah.
They say, I forgot who told me. Oh, Mike Flanagan. Mike Flanagan told me, let him rip the jersey off your back. He goes, they don't care about you when you leave the game. He goes, you play as long as you can and let them rip the jersey off your back. And that always stayed with me. He told me that like in 88 or 89 when we were in Toronto. And, you know, that always stuck with me. And that's what I tell these guys today. Stick it out. Who cares? They're going to pay you $1 million. That's $1 million you're not making. But let them rip the jersey off. And that was my motto going in.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier growing up as a Yankee fan, we're talking to David Wells and doing book reports on Babe Ruth. I remember you wearing that Babe Ruth hat for like an inning or two in a start that you made. Where'd you get that hat from, the vintage Babe Ruth hat?
Well, a buddy of mine, Mark Jordan, I think he works for Heritage Auction House now. I used to buy all my memorabilia from him. I got all how I got it started. And he came to me one day and says, hey, listen, I got this hat from this estate. These people want to sell it. I said, is it legit? Find out. He goes, 100%, it's legit. And he says, they want 30,000 for it. And I'm like, tell them I'll give them 20,000. And he came back and he says, nope, they want 30 or nothing. I'm like, I'll take it. So I bought it for 30 grand.
Wow.
And I took a lot of heat for it. A lot of the media kind of beat me up over it. Like, you know, I was kind of stupid, and a lot of people said you're an idiot for buying that hat. And you know, I ended up wearing it in a game. Joe Torre didn't like it. He got a little PO'd at me, and he told me it wasn't the required uniform. And I've been battling back and forth with people on Twitter right now, so they're like, what did you do with the hat? And I wore it, and then went into the story about Joe Torre, and Joe Torre wasn't very happy, so he fined me $2,500. And I'm like, and I told him that's all, and that was it. But he wasn't really too. And if anybody would have understood, it should have been Joe Torre, because you know, as a historian, and you know, his love for the game as well, and being the manager, it would have been cool. But he just didn't like me back in those days.
I'm surprised he's the one. Like, I figured the opposing manager would complain about it.
He didn't like you,
umpire.
But I want to jump in, David. He didn't like you back in those days. Is that what you're saying about Torre?
No, we banged heads a lot. So, you know, it was just I don't know whether it was him trying to control me, and you know, I just said, leave me alone. You want to win every 5 days? Leave me alone. And you know, I would go in every 5 days. You know, the media, once the media left, I went into my routine. We went out for BP. I'd turn the music up. I would put on Metallica. I'd have Disturbed, Slipknot. I'd have all these heavy metal bands, but I had to throw my Van Halen in there because I love Van Halen. And so I made a tape or a CD, and I would play it every 5 days when I stretched. And then Joe would come in, and he would turn it down. Well, I'd go in there, I'd turn it back up. He'd turn it down, I'd turn it back up. So it was just stupid little crap like that, you know, kind of escalated. And so David Cohn kind of stepped in, and he's like, Joe, just let me handle him. Let me take him. You know, I'll monitor him and all that. And, you know, by All-Star break, I think that year, I think Dave went to Joe and says, hey, you got to split us up. So that was kind of funny. But yeah, we butted head on a lot of issues and stuff like that. And I just didn't think he treated everybody on the team the same as, you know, as he would Jeter or Posada and guys like that. And, you know, and that's just, you know, that's what we thought. There was a bunch of us that thought the same way, but, you know, it is what it is. We were still playing for the Yankees, so it didn't matter. If he was my manager or anybody else, I was still playing for the Yankees.
Did that change your second time around? Like, by the time when you came back in 02 and 03, was the relationship better, or was it kind of similar to what you just described?
Kind of got worse.
Worse?
Yeah, it kind of got worse. But, you know, best thing, dude, just stay away. Just go about your business and try not to get in any trouble and create, a scene or just whatever. Try to stay out of the papers. And that was hard for me because I hated staying in the house. So I always went out. I always did what I wanted to do. And, you know, but I went out on the mound and I won a lot of games. It's like,
you did.
Trying to control people, and, you know, and it just didn't it just didn't sit well. But, you know, I understood. He was great. Joe was a good manager. Don't get me wrong. But he, you know, it's just when you try to put the reins on somebody, I'm a grown man. You know, I can do what I want. As long as I do my job on the field, then if I'm doing it badly, then dispute it. But don't, when I'm pitching good, don't try to change me. Don't fix something if it isn't broke.
Right.
You know, so to me, that's kind of, that's how our relationship was. And, you know, and then I went to work for TBS, and every chance I had, I was going to bash them. TBS got mad at me for doing it.
Really?
So, yeah. So, you know, one day this was years ago, and I just finally said, you know, it's not worth it. It's not worth the time, the energy. Joe is a good guy. And so we made up, and I just, you know, he does his charity events for the Safe at Home Foundation and all that. So I have attended a few of them, and, you know, we get along. Actually, we do get along, even though I still have a lot of things that he denied me on that were petty little things and all that. It still sits in the back of my mind, but it's not worth it now. Just go on life and be happy.
Right.
David Wells, of course, talking about his career here and his relationship with Joe Torre. All right, the perfect game. Going into that day, you have any idea? I mean, obviously you're not going into a game thinking, oh, I'll pick the perfect game today. But just an inkling that you were going to pitch well going into that start. How about that?
Dude, I was hoping I would make it out of the first inning.
So the stories are true then.
Yeah, now we've heard some stories, David. I've heard some stories there. So, yeah, go ahead.
You know, what's funny is Jimmy Fallon the other night, he did a show, and he was doing it with Adam Sandler on their little podcast that he does with his show. And he brought that up. So him and Adam were talking about it, and everyone was sending me the link. And so I texted Jimmy. I'm like, hey, buddy, thanks for the shout-out. It's a good message. He tells the story better than I do. But, it's one thing led to another after SNL show, going to the party, and then leaving like 5:30-ish in the morning and having to pitch that day. And, you know, that happened to be the day I threw the perfect game. But, wow. Just,
that's crazy.
Know, on a bender, a couple hours of sleep wasn't good because I was still, you know, I was still a little inebriated when I got to the park.
Does that, though, as a
that's like legend. That's legend.
Oh, of course. It adds to it.
Stupid is what it was.
Well, did it make you 5 days later want to do it again? Was there any superstition related to it where you said, hey, if I pitched the perfect game off a bender, man, I should do this more often?
Yes.
So did you do
it? I went out a lot before the night before I pitched. I went out a lot later in my career. You know, I went out a lot. And it started in 97 with David Cohn, you know, in Oakland. So when he came off his aneurysm, you know, the night we got in, we were up to about 3 in the morning drinking in the hotel. And then the next day I was so hungover on the bench, and he pitched, and he had a no-hitter. He got pulled with a no-hitter.
Right. I remember that. Count. Yeah, right. Yep.
Yeah, so, well, I'm on the bus after the game, and he's – And he gets on the bus. He goes, Boomer, let's go. I said, go where? And he goes, we're going out. I said, no, dude, I got a pitch tomorrow, man. I'm not feeling too good still. I'm still hungover from last night. And he goes, well, remember I was there? And I go, yep, you're absolutely right. So I got up, got in the car. He got a limo, and a few of us went into San Francisco and lit it up. And I pitched the next day, and I think I ended up throwing a complete game. So that's kind of how it started. I'm going to blame David Cohn for that.
Yeah, you know, all Cody's fault, yes.
You know, it's funny. I've heard, you know, David, there's a lot of different stories like that. I mean, I've heard Mickey Mantle, like, hitting a home run after he had a hangover. Joe Namath had a big game one time after a hangover. I mean, I hear this kind of thing a lot, David.
Yeah, I mean, you're relaxed the next day. You know, even though you don't feel that great, you just, once you get locked in, you get locked in. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but. You know, I knew with that game, and everybody knew I was out, and I mean, I smelled like a damn brewery the next day.
Right.
I said, if I don't keep this team in the ball game today, I'm going to get fined, suspended, maybe traded. Who knows?
It just, right.
You know, and that was just one of those things that I got lucky, and you know, all the stars were lined up right, and guys made the plays behind me, and you know, I came out looking good.
Did you think?
By the way, did Joe know about that? Did Joe know that you were a little under the weather going into that start?
The only one that knew was Coney and our masseuse. I think it was Rohan.
Right.
And And I think that I just went in there and I said, well, you just work on my legs, dude. Just get into those legs and calves and feet. And because first thing that goes is your legs. When your legs go, you're done.
Right.
You know,
right,
and so right, I just right. said, and but I went from the from the masseuse table to the bathroom, back and forth, you know, just loading up with coffee, water. And, you know, I just, you know, it was a mess. And Coney and the masseuse were the only two guys that knew it.
Good thing Torrey didn't have to make any visits to the mound. He would have smelled the brewery.
Did you go out and celebrate after the perfect game? Did you go out again that night?
Oh, did we ever. Oh, yeah. Took it into the next wee hours of the morning. Then we had to do Mel Stottlemyre's. We had to do his charity event the next day.
Oh, boy.
Wow. So I think Graham Lloyd, Cone. I mean, I don't know if Cone came with us, but I know it was me, Graham Lloyd, a couple other guys. And so we had to drive out to Connecticut. And the traffic, we didn't take in mind the traffic because we went to bed about 3:34 in the morning, and we had to be there at 8 and for a shotgun. And I got there at 8:05, but I created my own lane. I said, if there's any day I'm never going to get arrested, it's today. And we made our own line, and people were pissed. We went on the median.
Oh, my God. There. Are you serious?
Yeah, so I met my team. They already teed off. This par 5, they teed off, and I met them on the second shot. And I'm here. I grabbed a beer on the way down. I chugged a beer.
Right,
and I haven't even swung a club yet. I grabbed my 5-wood. I'm like 200 something out, a dog leg right. I put it about 2 feet from the pin, and we eagled it.
Come on! No, wait a minute.
Lord of God, so, dude, hold on. It was awesome.
So you come up. You're driving on the media. Who is it? You, Cone, and Graham Lloyd. Is that what you said it was?
I think Graham Lloyd was with us. Maybe Nelly might have been with me. I drove out there.
Jeff Nelson.
Right.
Yeah, it was a crap show. It was unbelievable.
So after you pitch this perfect game, so the next day, here you are, you've been out all night, you go up, your second shot, 270 in with a 5-wood, and you put it to 2 feet from the pin?
No, it was about 220, 230.
Oh, 230, I'm sorry, 230, whatever it was.
No, I wouldn't be able to. I'd have to pee in a cup if I hit it that far.
Wow, what a 48 hours stuff. For you,
That's
man.
Pretty good, David. But man, you were rolling, man, that's for sure.
Oh, dude, it was unbelievable. Those were the good old days. No social media, no cameras, no phone, no camera phone. So we got away with a lot of stuff.
Oh, I bet.
But I think if I was to do it today, I'd probably just say, spell my name right. Who knows?
Right. That's funny, man. But you're totally right. No one was arresting you in the 48
no, not
hours
that
around that.
Oh,
party.
Hell no.
I mean, it's David Wells. He just pulled off this incredible feat at Yankee Stadium. Did you?
Well, I hung out with all the cops anyway, so it was great.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, like during the games at Yankee Stadium, I'd walk down the tunnel into they have that little police station in the tunnels there for all the drunk people when they arrest them for whatever. For intoxication, I'd go in there and mess with them all the time. Then I'd go into their dressing room there, and they have a table. They'd be playing poker. I'd play poker and watch a game on TV with them. Oh, it was great. I hung out with those dudes. They had my back. NYPD had my back.
Nah, they're the best. We're talking to David Wells. That year, I mean, the Yankees are unbelievable. You guys won 114 games. You're having the best year of your career. The one piece of adversity on the field you guys faced was that Cleveland series, and you were tremendous. You won the game 5. I think you won game 1 as well. Take me through kind of the thought process when you guys finally did face that adversity. You lose that game at Yankee Stadium, the Knobloch game. Then you lose in Cleveland. You're down 2-1. Outside of that, I mean, you guys swept the first round. You swept the Padres in the World Series. But how about being down 2-1 in that series to Cleveland and the adversity you faced in the ALCS that year?
Well, I told Joe, let me pitch game 1. Let me have Cleveland. I'll get them twice because I owned Cleveland. Cleveland couldn't beat me for anything. And I told Joe, I said, you give me 2 chances with them, we're going to go to the world. We're going to win. We'll win it all. And so that was just my thing because I knew I was like the Yankees. Pitching against the Yankees, the same thing with Cleveland because they always had a great lineup.
Right,
But I wanted to pitch against the best guys, and I knew the guys. I knew how to pitch, you know, to them. And, you know, Manny Ramirez was, you know, he was a stud, but you just quick pitch him. Get him out of his element. He'd call timeout, and then as soon as he got back in, I'm firing on him. So that's how you know, I kind of got in their head, and they couldn't beat me. And the fans, oh, boy, they hated me.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
I couldn't even go out anymore.
Yeah, I remember you had issues with their fans because some of their fans were going over the line with some of the taunts that they had of you, and you called them out, right? So you never liked those Indian fans, yeah.
Yeah, in 97 they did it because my mom just passed away, and they were in the bullpen when I was warming up. They were talking crap about my mom, glad she's dead, that. And it just, yeah, it was about as bad as you can get. And you know what's funny is because now that we're quarantined here, I've been going through a closet, and let me tell you, I've got so much crap that I've saved over the years and stuff that people have sent me. And I found the letter from the mayor apologizing from 97 for that incident.
The mayor of Cleveland.
So I saved everything. I'm going, I mean, tons of magazines. My wife's going to put, she's going to put something together for my son because he's back from Michigan State and, you know, obviously college is over now. So, and just put stuff and just put it online and sell because I got a ton of stuff. I found like 100 posters that I haven't signed. So I signed them. I found these other things. So I did a little video the other day, but I might redo it, but I signed everything. What I want to do is I want to put it, get it online, Twitter or Facebook or whatever, and do a website and then get this, sell this stuff and, you know, and give money to our first responders.
That's great.
Great stuff.
All that.
Man.
So So I'm going to, you know, in the next day or so, put it on there. And I know times are tough right now for people losing their jobs. And, you know, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I'm going to try to raise money to help our first responders. And actually a buddy of mine in New York is doing that. He has a sandwich place that he started. It's Justin Fossey, and he opened his own catering. So he's now doing stuff for the first responders, making sandwiches and taking to them there. So,
That's great.
I'm going to do a little shout out for I just did, but I'm going to do a video and put it and send it to him, and he can put it on his social media and do that. So we can try to cave. Because I tell you what, I mean, I wouldn't want to be out there doing what they're doing.
Oh,
these
they're
guys
heroes,
are heroes.
Man. Yeah, they really
unbelievable.
Are.
Yeah. Matter. So you know, and having ties in New York and all this stuff's New York. Basically, 99% of this is New York memorabilia and stuff. So maybe these New Yorkers will do it, and you know the money's going to go to these first responders. So hopefully, everybody, all your listeners, you know, they want to do it. I'll create something. So just stay tuned, and I'll give you my my Twitter and all that, and you maybe get it out there.
Awesome.
Great stuff. That's great,
awesome.
David.
Yeah.
Really
we're,
is.
We're talking to the former Yankee David Wells. When you, because I could see how this would just tick you off. And tick some Yankee fans off when they traded you for Roger Clemens. Now, I get Roger Clemens all-time great. Guys winning the Cy Young. Guys dominating. But considering what you did in 1998, when you get that phone call, I get how great Roger Clemens is, but what was your reaction when you're told you're going to Toronto, back to Toronto?
Oh, I got punched right in the gut on that one. That hurt. And, you know, what was weird is because it was the first day of spring training. So I walk in, and I still got my goatee, and you know, I always, that's what I did. I go in and shave when I got there, save it to the last second. And then I want my second chin to show up. So I go in there, I'm in my locker, and I put my shorts on. I'm getting ready to go in there. And then Cashman comes in, hey, Joe wants to see you. And I'm like, oh boy. I said, let me go shave first. He goes, no, you don't need to. I said, hold on. I'm walking to the bathroom, and Cashman's follow me. He goes, Boomer, you don't need to go. You don't, no, don't shave it. You're good. I'm like, just, I don't want to start off on the wrong foot.
Right.
But just chill the hell out and let me do it. Let me do it. And he goes, he grabs me. He goes, no, he wants to see you now. I'm like, wow. All right. Must be important. I go in there and I see Joe. I said, Joe, what's up? He goes, take a seat. We got to wait for a couple people. I'm like, no, I'm going to stand. And what do you mean wait for a couple people? And I looked at him. I go, am I getting traded? And he goes, unfortunately, yes. And I'm like, oh, my God. I mean, just the life, the air, just the wind came right out of me. And I was devastated. And I'm just sitting there thinking, and I'm like, well, you know what? It's a business. Crap happens. You know, you got to do what you got to do. And I said, you know what, Joe? You know, it was a nice run. He goes, yep. And I said, well, I tell you what. As long as it isn't Toronto, I don't care where I go.
Wow. Is that what you said?
He looked at me. He looked at me. His eyes got the size of a freaking as a silver dollar, and I looked at him. I go, "You're kidding me? You're trading me to Toronto?" And he goes, "Yep." And I'm like, "For who?" And he goes, "For Clemens." And I'm like, "That some bitch. He didn't want to come. He didn't want to come to New York in '97 when I signed."
Right.
So
right.
And that was a big thing because they put me on hold, and so he was signing. He was a free agent. So when Steinbrenner offered me that contract, I said yes. And then he called a couple days later and says, "We're going to put you on hold." Then Toronto offered me a huge contract, and then they put me on hold. So I'm bidding. So I'm actually going against Roger, and so the media is going back to what I said. I need to get Roger's number. I said I need to get him and hurry up, pick a team because I got two nice contracts on the line. That's all I said. He needs to pick a team, you know. And I was being sarcastic,
right?
And all hell broke loose, and then that's kind of the feud between Roger and I started.
Sure.
And then he took it with a grain of salt, and then he fired back on me, and I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And then that's kind of how it started, you know, that relationship that wasn't too good. But, you know, so in comes Homer Bush and Graham Lloyd. And so us three for Roger Clemens. And so Graham's upset. He's crying. I'm about ready to cry because he is. That's my boy. And Homer Bush is sitting there with the biggest grin on his face, smiling from ear to ear. And I looked at him. I said, "What are you smiling for?" He goes, "I'm going to play."
Right.
Thinking the
right.
same thing, yeah.
Right, sure, sure.
And then I started cracking up. I said, "You know what? You're right. Because you're not playing here with Knobloch and everybody in front of you.
Right.
You know, and it's not fair to Homer Bush because he was a hell of a player."
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, I could see why he'd be excited. That makes perfect sense.
Oh, no doubt.
David, do you think, now obviously you traded for Clemens, but do you think part of it was your relationship with Torrey that they got you out of there?
Yeah, no doubt. 100%. You know, and he might tell you otherwise, but I know
right.
for a fact because,
right.
you know, he ran the team. George gave him, you know, him and George went at it, and like George would interfere, and Joe's like, "Well, I'm quitting. I'm leaving if you're not going to give me the reins." You know, so obviously it was his decision, and I found out later because they used to eat all the time at Maggiano's in Tampa,
right?
And so I found out the real story. So and I'll keep that under wraps, but I found out the real story and all that stuff. So it just kind of, you know, it just kind of sucked. But, you know, I went to Toronto. It was a business, so I went to Toronto and I pitched well. Then in 2000, I won 20 games. So,
yeah.
I didn't stray from the thing. I didn't get, you know, I was upset, yeah. But I was pissed off even more because they went back to back to back.
Yes,
we know that.
That's a few more rings I could have had on my finger.
Oh, no doubt. But then, considering the relationship you had with Torrey, what led you back in 02 and 03? Because your second run with the Yankees was pretty good, too. I know it didn't end with a championship. You did win the pennant in 2003. Were you surprised? And what did lead you back to the Yankees, considering the relationship with Joe Torrey wasn't exactly the best?
You know what? I don't know. It might have been George and Jenny. Because Jenny loved me. She was awesome. I loved her. She still do. She's awesome. And she was a big fan. George was a big fan. You know, and I think that after the Diamondbacks beat them, you know, I guess they figured they might need some pitching. God forbid, you know, something happens. Because I went out to Arizona, flew me out, and I met with Colangelo, and I had no deal on the table whatsoever with anybody except Arizona. And so when I went there and, you know, they showed me around, blah, blah, blah. We went to dinner, I think, at Grimaldi's Pizza. And we sat there and we started banging out a contract. But he was promising me this and promising me that. And, you know, I said, "No, I'd rather take the money, bro. I don't need memberships and this and that." And it was a low-ball offer, but it was the only one on the table. And and some guy asked me the other day on Twitter, and I'm just like, I didn't want to get into the story. And he's just like, "So... I do," and he shook my hand. He goes, "Do we have an agreement?" And I looked at my agent, and he goes, yeah. He goes, let's do it, because it's the only deal on the table. And so I shook his hand, and then after he shook my hand, he goes, well, it's contingent upon a physical. And I'm like, whoa, wait a second. He goes, I said, I've been here all day. We could have done a physical. I said, and I'm not coming back for a physical. It's either a done deal now or not. And he goes, nope, we got to do it. And my agent grabbed me, and we walked. And he goes, there's your out right there. Hmm. God forbid anything happens. And the next day, I think it was Christmas Eve, George Steinbrenner calls me. We meet at Pete Shorty's in Clearwater next to Hooters there. And we banged out a contract. And it was awesome. It was just George and I. And it was unbelievable.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
It was memorable. It was a memorable, you know, 2 hours of him and I sitting there over Shorty Burgers. And he was drinking Coke. I was drinking a beer. And, you know, it was great.
And then you got to be teammates with Roger Clemens. That must have had a happy ending.
That
you guys
must
have been best friends, right?
Not best. We just golfed about a month and a half, 2 months ago, and over in Vegas for Bernie Nichols' for his charity event. And Roger, me, and this guy who bought Roger and I. Oh, and Marty McSorley. There's
right,
a name
right.
for you.
Sure.
Yeah, he was an all. He was.
Yep.
Yeah, he was a brute.
Bernie Nichols is a lot of NHL guys involved there.
Yeah, Grant Fuhr was there.
Right,
Jeremy
right.
Roenick.
Wow.
A whole bunch of us were there for Bernie's for his event, and so Roger, me, and Marty were there. This guy bought three of us to golf with us, and Roger, man, he's the king of jokes. Loves karaoke. But we got a really good relationship now. I really enjoy hanging out with him, you know, when we get the opportunity, you know, and he's a great guy. He really is. And, you know, all those years of a little bit of animosity, but until you really get to know somebody
right.
like that, it makes a world of difference. And, you know, he's great. He's awesome.
David, tremendous stuff, man. We could do the whole show with you here, David. I mean, you need to write it. You need
what
to write
do I it. Got going on? Let's do it.
You know what? If you got time, I got one more question for you, David. One more.
What do I got to do? I got to go.
No, look, we understand.
And by the way, when you get all that figured out, definitely send us the info. We'll pump it up as much as possible
you,
to get
right,
people to bid on those
posters
items.
And all the memorabilia you're sending out there.
Yeah, I'll send it to Eric. I'll send it to Eric. And
beautiful.
And then he could, yeah, so. Yeah, so I'll get it all out there. And, you know, a lot of people there have my Twitter. I mean, it's not hard to find me on Twitter.
That
so,
is true.
Yeah.
When you go back in the 03 World Series, I remember you started game one. You pitched well. I think you ran into Brad Penny, I think, started that game. And the Marlins took game one. But the series turned on, to me, two things. Joe Torre's mistake of not going to Mariano Rivera in game four. And then you getting hurt in game five right. because you always right. were, and I said this before, a money pitcher. We saw
always.
That in the ALCS
always.
Back in 1998. We saw it throughout your career. And after the first inning of that game, you had to come out with an injury. What happened that night, and was it close to you staying in? Kind of what occurred for you to come out after one inning, game five of the World Series that year?
Well, my back was hurting. You know, my back straw was taken. I must have took probably, I don't know, 8-10 injections that year in my back. And so when Aaron Boone hit the home run off Wakefield, they never let the family in the clubhouse after, you know, wins and stuff like that. Well, this time they did, because we're going to the World Series. And they let him in, and my wife came running in, and she jumped on me. Like, cause she was excited, happy, and all that. And my back went out.
Wow.
I'm like, get off me. I started yelling at her. She started crying. I was just, I went to the ground. I was just like in pain. I mean, I was in serious pain. Cause she blew my back out.
Wow.
And so the next day we have a meeting. We don't have a workout. We just have a meeting. So I got there really early. And I had Stevie and Gino, and they're working on me. And, you know, with all these different techniques that Gino has, it's like this spatula on this machine, and you put it, and it's like shocks the hell out of you. but it's like one of those tensing unit, but it's an old fashioned one. I think Babe Ruth used that thing too. So I went there and I was doing everything to get my back done. And I was just like, I was in pain. So
wow.
I'm leaving. I shower up after all that and I leave and I'm not walking very good. And I get up to my car and one of the clubhouse kids goes, "Hey, Joe Torre wants to see you." I'm like, "What?" He goes, "Joe wants to see you." I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" So I walk back into the clubhouse, like waddle into the clubhouse. I go into Joe's office and I said, "What's up, Skip?" And he goes, "Oh, by the way, you're pitching game one tomorrow." I'm like, "Are you kidding me? You couldn't tell me that when we were here?" Because I didn't know. I didn't think I was pitching.
Right, right.
And I'm just like, and he goes, "You got a cup press conference." I'm like, "Holy moly." So I was pissed now. I wanted to kill him for doing that. I wanted to kill him.
Right.
So I go in there and I do this press conference and I'm just grinding it through. Didn't want to be there. You know, I was in pain, all that. So I do it and I get out and I get in the car. I'm driving back to the city and I called the doc. I said, "Hey, doc," I said, "can I come in and get an injection?" He's like, "Come on in." So I go down there and I get an injection and I'm like, "Wow, this is great." I felt like a 20-year-old again. I go out and pitch game one.
Yeah.
It was great. I mean, I got out pitched. Brad Penny had a great game, you know, and we lost, I think, 3-2.
Yeah.
And so that the shot took. I'm good, doing all my normal routines and all that stuff. And then we get to Miami on game five. And that morning, I felt great. And then around noon, I started tightening up. And I'm like, "Oh, geez." Mm-hmm. So I go to the ballpark, and I'm out, and you know, I'm just kind of stretching because it's hot down there. So I'm just kind of doing some stretching, a little bit of throwing, and, you know, it's not subsiding. It's still kind of go. So, you know, right before the game, I get a shot of Tordal. And I go in there and, you know, I feel a little good. And I go out and I start going through my routine. I do it out there. And I threw two pitches and my back blew out. And I'm like, "Oh, my God." And I'm like, so I stopped. I got off the mound in the bullpen, laid down right in front of the bench in the mound, and I laid down there, and I just laid there.
Wow.
And Mel's just standing there looking at me, and I'm like, "Mel, you might want to get somebody else to pitch. I can't pitch. I'm jacked up." He goes, "No, you'll be fine." I'm like, "Mel, are you serious? Look at me. I'm on the ground." And he goes, you're going to be fine. I'm like, "Whatever." So I'm sitting there for about 5 minutes. I'm just laying there. Then I start pulling my knee, one knee, and then the other knee, and start doing that. And the game started. The game started, and I'm only throwing two pitches. And we end up scoring a run in the first inning. So I get up. I kind of lob a couple. I throw like five more pitches, and my bat goes out again. And I'm like, "Mel," I said, is this what you want? Then so be it. And I walked off the mound. I threw like seven pitches. And I walked in there, and I went on the first man. And the first, I think it was Juan Pierre. He bunts.
Yes.
And I just look at it. And Jason Giambi comes in and gets it. And then the next guy is Castillo.
Right.
And I think he hits a line drive to Jeter. And then Pudge is up third, and he hits a one-hopper to me. And I think I turn around, like, you know, you do your turnaround. I'm like, "Oh!" And I just turn around, and I think I bounced it. I'm not sure, but I think I bounced it to first base to Giambi. And I went 1-2-3. And I'm walking off the mound, and I said, "I'm out. I'm done."
Mm.
And I went right to the training room. I couldn't wipe my butt.
Mm,
my
wow.
back was so bad.
Wow.
And
wow.
for
wow.
four innings, I was in that clubhouse. No
wow.
trainer, no doctor, no pitching coach, no manager.
Really? Really?
Nothing. Yeah, nobody. And I was just like, "Wow." So I made a bag of ice, and I had one of the clubhouse kids put it on. And then Stevie Donahue came in, and so I got a Valium muscle relaxer and started drinking beers. So that's what happened. So there's your story.
Crazy.
For game five.
No, I got it. Crazy. I got it. We're talking to David Wells, and thank you, David. I mean, you're basically doing an hour with us, and you, like I said, you could do the whole show. So, what did Torre say to you after this? Now, what is? I mean, you already got this strained relationship with the guy. Now you have this situation. Did he say anything to you?
Nobody said a word.
That's amazing.
Really.
Nobody said a word, and I just, you know, and then I had to face the media, and I'm jacked up. I got a Valium in me. rah, 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 and about seven or eight beers down my neck. So wow. I was just like, well.
Valley and then eight we go, beers. Wow.
And that was.
And then I go, that was great.
Great. So, yeah,
sure, we go to sure this, was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. The plane ride wasn't very fun either because, I mean, you have to sit. And
right.
So I'm
right,
all
right.
jacked up. And we go to New York and, you know, I sat on the bench and Josh Beckett, you know, pitched his butt off in game six and Brad Penny beat me again. And so he won, you know, game five.
And that
so
was
he
it.
Won 1-5. Yeah. And then Beckett won, what, 2-6.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Came back on short rest.
But those guys have, they had a stud, they had a great team, great pitching.
Sure.
You know, good pitching is going to be good hitting, and that's what they did. But, yeah, that thing could have changed. I think if they would have put somebody else, maybe Weaver, start the game, he would have been a lot better off instead of coming into a game. It's tough when you got to go into a game not going through your routine as a starter.
Yeah,
so,
no doubt.
But I gave him the opportunity. I said, Mel, I'm done. I can't do it. And he goes, you'll be all right. And, but I'm like, all right, this is what you guys want, so be it. I toughed it out. I took a lot of heat for that because, you know, me walking off, a lot of the
you
fans.
Did.
Oh,
you
yeah,
did.
I remember
yeah,
that.
You
sure
took
playing.
A lot of heat for that, David.
Well,
no
but I think a part of it, David, is I think as fans, we didn't know the truth.
Right.
All we
Nobody
know
knew.
Is
Nobody knows
David
really
Wells pitched
on.
An inning. He pitched a fine 1-2-3 inning. Now he's out of the game, and we don't know everything else that went into that. You know?
Yeah, and you're a guy that pitched all the time. As you said, you're a guy that was always and pitched big games and was always out there. So that, you know, people like, what's going on here, you know? Yeah.
I pitch hurt. I mean, it's fine. Give me the ball. I'll go out as long as I can until I can't do it. And then a week later, after the World Series, I have back surgery.
Mm.
Wow.
Well,
yeah,
here's
that's how bad it was.
Here's a bottom line, Dave, and I think you know this. Yankee fans love you. You had a very good run as a Yankee.
No question.
You won a hell of a lot more games than you lost. You pitched the perfect game, and you were on, for my money, the greatest team I've ever seen in the 1998 Yankees. So I think Yankee
fans.
Oh,
we were awesome.
Oh, my God.
No, they are. And Yankee fans are great. Every time I go to New York, you know, they're awesome. You know, they're very hospitable. They love it. I enjoy them just as much. You know, to me, it's like, I feel like New York is my home because I get treated better there than I do in my own hometown of San Diego. It's unbelievable.
No, I believe that.
Oh, yeah, but New York fans, they get it. They love it. And you know what? You know, when I went to Boston and I came back and I went to San Diego, came back, I got a standing ovation. It was great. It was very emotional. But when I came back as a Red Sox, man, I felt like Reggie Jackson out there. They were throwing batteries and food and money
you know
at
the
me.
Deal.
And it was just like,
come on, you know what that's all about, David. You know.
Yeah, oh, seriously. My God. I got nailed to the cross on that
that's
one.
Funny.
It was unbelievable. Yeah, it really sucked is that because I'm like, wait a second. I just came back a couple years ago as a Padre, and you know now I'm a Red Sox, and I understand that rivalry as good as anybody. But David Cohn came back as a Red Sox, and he got cheered. So I was just like, what the hell is wrong with that picture?
Yeah.
But anyways, it is what it is, and then you know you come back as Old Timers Day. They forgive and forget.
Oh,
that's what's so good about. That's what's so good about Yankee fans.
No doubt. David, we really appreciate
Tremendous,
you coming
David.
On, man, and we'll definitely plug a lot the
Absolutely.
Items that you're selling for charity, and
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for coming on, man.
David, great
oh,
stuff,
my pleasure,
man.
Pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Great stuff. Appreciate it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.